You found Primetime Action with Gil Alexander and Matt Brown on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number two of Primetime Action live from the South Point. Gil Alexander, Matt Brown, Kelly Bidlin. Glad you could hang out with us tonight, Monday night, after the greatest weekend of football ever. The greatest day of football ever. We'll continue with the Saturday games. We already went through the two Sunday games. We'll talk about both the Bengals and the Titans and the Niners and the Packers momentarily. But first, Kelly, with the update of all the scores.
Yeah, we've got just the one game going in the NBA right now. Knicks on top of the Cavaliers, 48-47, 1 minute left in the first half. Live numbers on this game. Cavaliers still favored 2.5 to 3.5. You'll find on the live lines, 198.5 your live total. Over on the ice, four games in action. Rangers up on the Kings, 1-0 at the first intermission. Rangers minus 450 live. Kings plus 295 is the live total. Stars up on the Flyers, 1-0. Second period just getting started. Stars minus 450 live. Flyers plus 295. Live total set at 5. Ducks lead the Bruins, 1-0 at the first intermission. Ducks minus 120. Bruins minus 110. Total at 5. And at the first intermission between Vegas and the Washington Capitals, it is scoreless. Live numbers on this game, Capitals minus 150, Golden Knights plus 110, and the total 4.5. Over in college basketball, Louisville and Virginia at the half. Virginia leading that one 35-23. Virginia, 11-point live favorite, 123, the live total on that game. And then two NBA games starting here in the next 10 minutes. Pacers at the Pelicans. Pelicans, 3.5-point favorite, 218, the total for that game. A ton of injuries on both sides, so if you are planning on betting it, definitely make sure to go through that thoroughly. Bulls at the Thunder starting here in the next 10 minutes as well. Thunder, about a pick 'em, or you could find a 1-point favorite on either side here. 217.5 is the total. Just saw that Vooch will play for the Bulls tonight.
Vooch.
LaVine is back. DeMar DeRozan is out. This is another game with a lot of injuries, especially on the Chicago side. So check it out before you go and bet anything.
All right. Since we're doing this in reverse order, and Matt said something about the Packers-Niners game on Twitter that I wanted to get to also because he was taking some incoming on that. But literally, like I texted Jeff Parlay, my producer, on a numbers game. After the two Saturday games, I'm like, what was the most gut-wrenching loss between those two? How silly of a question that felt like 24 hours later after we saw what the Bills endured. But let's do it reverse. Let's continue the reverse. Green Bay loses to San Francisco 13-10. Imagine Green Bay ends up with the fewest points of all of the playoff teams all weekend long with just 10. And as I mentioned in the past hour, after their opening touchdown drive to go up 7-0, the rest of the Packers drives the rest of the way. Fumble. That was Mercedes Lewis. Fumble. Punt, punt, punt. Blocked field goal, punt, field goal. Blocked punt, punt. That was it. The Niners didn't get their first completion. And first time that they had positive total yardage was on a 15-yarder to George Kittle with 6:36 left in the second quarter. That's how long it took them to get into positive ground. The Niners had it all set up late in the first half. They were getting outplayed. They were still only down 7-0. They had the ball deep in Packers territory, first and goal at the Green Bay 19, 1:09 left in the second quarter, holding penalty, and then Jimmy G rears his head with a horrible pick. Adrian Amos making the play, and you're thinking to yourself, they're never going to have enough to win this. But yet they did. Yet they did. Despite the fact that 3rd-and-3, by the way, at the end of the first half, the 75-yarder to Aaron Jones, where Jimmy Ward blew the coverage, that ends up being a Nick Bosa ends up forcing a fumble late in the first half. We never get to see the replay as to who actually recovered it. We have to take their word for it that it was the Packers. Mason Crosby gets that block by Jimmy Ward. So they go into the half 7-0. Later, it's 10-3, and then it's the blocked punt, 6:14 left. By the way, 6:14 left. There was a 3rd-and-1 for the Niners in this game. Couldn't get it done. If only they had drafted someone with the 3rd overall pick who could help him in high leverage plays. Green Bay, 3 and out, punting from their own 12 with 4:50 left, the play of the game. Jordan Willis, with them not even trying to block the punt, he blocks it. Talanoa Hufanga scores 10-10. and Matt, it didn't even look like the Packers knew they could recover that. They were nowhere to be found.
Yeah, well, I honestly think that the weird—I think the way that the ball went up, like I think people didn't even like know what was going on.
It's the weirdest.
It was like in the air for what felt like a minute and a half. But it was the weirdest because even I like because the camera didn't immediately follow it either. So you see the punt get blocked, but then you're like, where the hell did the ball go? Like what's going on? It was because it just had this like weird like trajectory after the block.
The last Packers play, and we'll close it with this, last Packers play was Aaron Rodgers going deep, 10-10 game to Davante Adams. He was double covered. Did you get the feeling that whole game Rodgers didn't trust anybody but Adams to his detriment?
Yeah, I mean this is why we keep looking back on this pick whenever they took Jordan Love, and you can point to games like this whenever you start to say that is a wasted pick. Any way you look at it, that is a wasted pick because you were not ever going to Jordan Love, and so now you could have gotten someone in there that by this time would be a second year guy for Aaron Rodgers, who could be a legitimate number two option. Gil, they did not have a completion to a wide receiver other than Davante Adams until 14 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
Jesus.
Till 14 minutes left in the fourth quarter. That was the first either running back, tight end, or wide receiver. It was 14 minutes in the fourth quarter. I mean, it's just it was no trust whatsoever with any of these other guys. And again, you go back to this, and did Rodgers play good? No, he didn't. He played pretty poorly. He made some bad decisions. There were a couple of different times you could see there were other guys at least open. Now whether they would have caught it or not, who knows? But they were at least open. But like you said, he didn't trust anybody other than Davante Adams, and maybe because he is as stubborn as he is, and maybe that's just his personality, but he's like, come hell or high water, I'm going to this guy every single time.
Packers had the ball four times after halftime. They had 48 total yards. It was 63 until the last two drives when they went for -9 and then had the punt blocked and then -6. That was your Green Bay Packers number one seed. And the Niners win at 13-10. Robbie Gould sinks the field goal at the end to seal the deal. Jimmy Garoppolo could have thrown about four pick sixes in that game.
Yeah, it was very, very fortunate for him that this game went the way that it did. I tweeted about this as a joke during the game, but did it not feel like when Mercedes Lewis fumbled on that second possession that just stopped the 49ers from getting trucked in that game?
From getting beat by 1,000.
Yeah, like it was like if they went down and just scored on that drive, which by the way, they were just moving again, like no big deal. And he fumbled that ball, and I was like, I can't say for sure that he ruined this game for us, but I feel like he ruined this game for us.
It's amazing. If they had stopped right there and someone had said to you right before that play, this is the peak of the game for the Packers.
Yeah.
This moment is not. They're not. It's not going to be any better the rest of the way than this.
What's funny is when I thought the whole first half, because after that first drive and then you get up to that fumble, like you said, Matt, I mean, they're moving the ball well. All I thought the whole first half was like, okay, the Packers better watch out. You're leaving points out on the field here, right? You don't let the 49ers keep this close. And then it's like, oh, the second half happened. Never mind. This was going to be close all along.
Yeah. Gil, and I think you're alluding to one of the things that I said during the game where I was just like, you know, this was a weather game. And like in a playoff game.
Oh, yes.
In a playoff game, I would just prefer each team to be able to play. And we see who wins on the field. And this game was complete garbage. I mean, like, these guys couldn't catch the ball. You could see that they were freezing cold. There were a couple of people who went to this game, and apparently, like, your feet get so cold sitting in the stands or whatever because you're just not used to it. Like, the locals were sitting there telling these people who had, like, come up, you know, there were some 49er fans there and all. So,
hey, Rob, was there.
By the way, you know what the get-in price was, guys?
No.
$30.
Oh, my goodness.
If you want to know how much they don't like the weather, even the people that live there, the get-in price was $30 to get into this game. But, you know, so I said, look, I understand the charm of Lambeau. I understand all that stuff like that, but I just want to see these guys play at an elite level. And, yeah, people got all, you know, mad at me because I said that and all that stuff. But it's like 11 teams play in domes, four other teams play in either California or Florida. And you're looking at this, and it's half the league plays in ideal conditions. There's a reason why Super Bowls don't get played in Green Bay.
Yeah.
There's a reason why Super Bowls are in L.A., in Vegas, in New Orleans, in Miami, in all these places like that.
Yeah.
Because you want optimal conditions.
The only pushback on that, and not that it's a surprising bit of pushback, it's pushback that you know, is that's supposed to be the Packers' advantage.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's so I totally hear what you're saying, but like that's specifically why Lambeau's supposed to be their advantage. But we said it all year on this show that all of the only team in the NFC that was built to beat them at Lambeau. And I know it worked out in the funniest of all ways, in the funkiest of all ways. Because we said in the AFC, there were teams, Titans, Colts, Browns. We saw that Browns blueprint, right, where Aaron Rodgers just sat there helplessly on the sideline. And thankfully for the Packers, Baker Mayfield threw that pick to Rasul Douglas. But we knew the Niners were the one team, and that was why Bosa and Warner were such a big deal. They were everything in that game. But it's an interesting take what you had, which is you would just prefer to see it played in pristine conditions so you know the true, what you're saying is without elements interfering.
Well, at least, look, there's cold and then there's that, right? I mean, like, it's different. Like, I mean, you can play in cold. I'm not, like, totally concerned with that. I mean, it was cold. It's, you know, it's going to be cold in Kansas City. It was cold in Tennessee. I get all that. But, like, the wind chill was 0 degrees. I mean, like that is a different level of everything, right? I mean, that's
brutal.
That's a completely different level of everything, and that does affect the game. I mean, like George Kittle does not get hit directly in the hands, and then just and he like looked at his hands as if to say, like, you're not functioning properly. Like he looked at his hands like they did something wrong.
People forget about that. That was after the Mercedes Lewis fumble. The next drive, Jimmy G hits Kittle wide open, streaking across the middle of the field. It just clanks off of him. How many people do you think are listening to this are screaming at you right now? It's football, man.
I know. It's football.
It's football.
Football's meant to be played outside, even though 11 teams don't do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Titans. Requiem for the Titans next. So hard to say goodbye to yesterday.
You are looking live at primetime action with Gil Alexander and Matt Brown on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you missed any part of our show or anything on the VSiN's schedule today, don't forget to check out our free sports betting podcast, catch replays of all our shows, or download and listen on your schedule. Go to VSiN.com/podcast and get Beating the Book. That's with me, Gil Alexander, or Market Insights with Josh Applebaum. Plus, we got Hardwood Handicappers, the Lombardi Line, Follow the Money, My Guys in the Desert, Coast to Coast Hoops, The Wide World of Wine Garden, and many more. They're all free and available now at VSiN.com/podcast or wherever you get your podcast. Gil Alexander, Matt Brown, Kelly Bidlin. Kelly, you know how I had you doing the Rocky theme? Do you know the It's So Hard to Say Goodbye?
No.
Do you all know that one?
It sounds like you're doing a great job.
You don't?
To
you
yesterday.
Don't know
today.
No.
Boyz II Men remade it?
I guess
you don't know that?
I guess, like... Yeah. He's a little. I mean, like he knows
Boyz
about.
Was like a
yeah, he knows
like,
about 60% of the references that we make, but like there are 40 that just.
Yeah, Boyz II Men. Like, you know, did I own a CD or two for sure? But like, do I know their whole track
Whoa.
List? Like Gil probably does. No, I don't. Sorry.
Like Gil probably does.
Yeah.
Gil knows it. Damn it. Bengals beat the Titans first of the four games on Saturday, and they beat them just in dramatic fashion, 19-16. We figured, oh, wow, that was a good football game. I wonder if other games will be this good. Turns out it was the least exciting of all, but it was damn good itself. Ryan Tannehill picks on the first pass of the game, the last pass of the game, the first pass of the second half. First pass of the game, interception. Six plays later, McPherson, 38-yard field goal, 3-0. That was a Jesse Bates pick. Now, towards the end of the quarter, Burrow throws low and inside to Ja'Marr Chase. Chase nabs it, goes 57 yards. That leads to a 6-0 lead. McPherson, 45-yard field goal. Second quarter, Tennessee, 11-17 left, down 6-0. Tannehill to Brown for 41 yards. Eight plays later, it's Derrick Henry, 6-6. Now, Cincinnati, too many men on the field. Ball goes to the 1-yard line. Matt, I had no problem with Vrabel going for it there.
No, and everyone's losing their mind, but like you're not planning on not being able to score in the game,
yes.
right? Like, so at that point, if you, everyone's like, no, you just take the lead and all stuff like that. Well, no, listen, here's the deal. If you have Derrick Henry and you have 1 yard to go and you
go
can get
for it.
I mean, like you're not planning on struggling offensively for the entire game.
Yes.
So like, yes, in retrospect, it's very easy for people to come back and go, now that one point and blah, 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 and all that stuff. It's like, you don't know that you're going to get bad quarterback play the whole time. Like you don't know, like you don't,
no,
you can't
you don't.
See the future. Like, so
I had no problem with anything Vrabel did. Vrabel Campbell, to me, he punted appropriately. He went for two appropriately. By the way, he also sang the two-for-one coming when the Bengals had the ball 6-6. Unlike Bruce Arians, he didn't take the two-for-one laying down. Bruce Arians mysteriously didn't call timeouts at the end of the first half when the Rams were knocking at the door, got bailed out by a fumble at the one. Vrabel didn't take it sitting down. It ends up being 9-6 going into the half in favor of the Bengals. Bengals' first drive of the second half, they matriculate the ball down the field at 16-6. And if you're holding Titans futures tickets like I am, you're like, oh no, what's going on? But 45-yard Foreman run, first and goal at the 9. The Titans set up to answer back. Tannehill pass tipped at the line by Mike Hilton, and he picks it off. And at that point, you know Ryan Tannehill is just your kryptonite. After a Cincinnati 3-and-out, though, Tannehill hits A.J. Brown for 40 on their way to a field goal, 16-9. First play, subsequent drive. Burrow's pass picked by Amani Hooker. In real time, I didn't think it was a pick. After replay, I didn't think it was a pick. But it was a pick, apparently. Did you think that was a pick?
So, by all accounts, right, like, if you catch a ball as it's hitting the ground, like, again, it goes back to what we don't know what the hell a catch is anymore.
When we grew up, that wasn't a catch. That wasn't a catch.
If you catch a ball as it's hitting
yes.
the ground,
yes.
that was not a catch back in the day. But now they're like, but the ball didn't move, and the tip can do this, and the whatever, and whatever.
It came down to the call on the field.
Yeah, if it had been absolutely. If he throws the red flag, he doesn't win that if it's called an incompletion.
So then Tannehill to A.J. Brown, unbelievable pass and catch, 33 yards, and all of a sudden it's 16-16. Tennessee ends up with the ball for the first time in a tie game since it was 0-0, since the first play of the game, with 11:18 left in the fourth quarter. Third and one at the Cincinnati 35, 8:06 left. Can we just sneak the ball? Tannehill keeper, stoned. Fourth and one at the Cincinnati 35, 7:21 left. Henry, stoned. Cincinnati eventually has to punt again. Tennessee first and 10 at their own 16, 2:43 left. They have the ball in a tie game. Five plays later, third and 5 at the Tennessee 40. Both teams in purgatory, neither can call a timeout. Cincinnati doesn't want to call one because if Tennessee gets a first down, they want them to have as little time as possible. Tennessee doesn't want to call a timeout because Cincinnati, they know that if they don't get the first down, they want to leave Cincinnati as much time as possible. As the clock rolls down to 30 seconds and 29 seconds, Zach Taylor's on the sideline frantically trying to call a timeout because he doesn't like the defensive formation. The officials don't see it. The play goes off. Tannehill, pick. Oh, Logan Wilson. Next play, first and 10 at the Cincinnati 47, 20 seconds left, and we know that's an eternity now. Burrow to Chase for 19 yards, field goal range. McPherson, 52 yards. Katie bar the door. Bengals win.
Few different takeaways from this game. One, all the people that were screaming as to how bad a pick Jamar Chase was for this squad, I hope you at least have written your articles now and you have gone on your radio shows and you've done whatever and said, I was wrong. That guy has, I would venture to say, he's worth at least 2 to 3 wins for this team this year from just how dynamic of a playmaker he is and how he can switch the field and or score in the blink of an eye, right? And then we talked about this leading into this, that he led that he had more 50-yard touchdowns than the next closest guy had 25-yard touchdowns on the course of the season. And I mean, that's just not a trait that a lot of these guys have, you know? And he is a game changer, and he did all that he could for this team. Now, final score 19-16. This game could have been way worse in favor of Cincinnati. If you look at this, Jamar Chase, one-on-one with a blocker and gets tackled, and they have to settle for a field goal. I was shocked he did not house that. Shocked. Jamar Chase, one-on-one with a blocker and gets tackled. They have to settle for a field goal. And to his credit, he played absolutely horrible. I think his best play of the whole game, Ryan Tannehill, was he throws the pick, and he tackles, and he makes the tackle. That is a pick six on 28 other quarterbacks in this league. Lamar Jackson runs the guy down. Kyler Murray runs the guy down. Maybe that might end the list right there. But, like, Ryan Tannehill's fast. He actually
He was a wide receiver in college.
They did the next gen stats. He got to 18 miles an hour.
He was a wideout in college.
On that tackle. Yeah. And again, that's a pick six on 28 other quarterbacks in this league. That didn't end up in a touchdown either. So this scoreboard isn't even indicative of what kind of game this could have been right here. And I mean, look, it just all goes back to, and I actually do fault Vrabel for one thing in this game. And I think Vrabel is has been and should be either right there neck and neck with Zach Taylor or win Coach of the Year in this thing. But I think he was loyal to a fault in this game with Derrick Henry.
I was going to ask you about that.
He had 20 carries for 62 yards, yeah. 3.1 yards a carry. And listen, it's part of the reason why I didn't agree with your assessment of this team moving forward, because we did not know what Derrick Henry we were going to get back with this team. And look, the eye test showed. Like, he was rusty. I don't think he was bad. He was just rusty. He yep. didn't have the burst. He didn't have the thing. He didn't have – and the reason I say loyal to a fault is because Foreman only got four carries. Like, I'm fine with if you want to give your guy carries, but after Foreman showed the burst that he showed and it was able to flip the field that time that he was able to do that and everything, I don't know. I think it was a little bit of coaching malpractice, and more than anything, there is the track record with Derrick Henry. This isn't like what we're talking about with some of these other games. Like, I understand you're loyal to your dude, you ride your horse, you ride your guy.
Yes, but one thing to be loyal to Cam Akers, another yes, thing to be loyal yes. to Derrick Henry. And, yes,
but I do believe loyal to a fault.
I agree with you. I think you're 100% right about that. No question. And Derrick Henry was rusty. You're 100% right about that. Now, I'll respectfully disagree with the fact that you think that the Bengals should have won this going away. Whenever you were sacked the opposing quarterback nine times and mitigate that by three picks, I would say you might have been able to crush the other team. So I'm not sure I agree with that point at all. But let me get back to my thing about the Titans. The bet, remember, was for them to get the number one seed. And then I said repeatedly, at that point, who knows what happens. But you just got to set up your bet as well as possible. I also did say, though, that if they didn't get to the AFC Championship, the bet's kind of a bust. And so the bet ended up being a bust. If you can't get to the next step, championship game, I probably would have felt, yeah, okay, that we gave it a run. But the fact that they came up short in this game was just such a testament and such a reflection of Ryan Tannehill's really true level in this. What really bothered me also about him, guys, is I didn't see the face I wanted to see. I want to see some emotion, and he just looks nonplussed, and it makes you dislike him. It makes you just get upset about it while it's happening. It's like, show some emotion.
Show me something. I know Tannehill and Garoppolo have had good, not even just solid, good statistical years over the past few years. I will never trust those two. I'm sorry. In big games, when we get down to this point of the season, I cannot trust betting on either one of them.
Think about the difference. Garoppolo came oh so close to about not only four picks, but four pick sixes. Tannehill threw the ball into coverage, bounces, goes to the Bengals all three yeah. times, which is equally wrong, right? Equally bad. Bad things will happen. Bengals get there, 19-16. We'll preview the championship games, how we feel about those on the 7 and on the 3 on two key numbers. And we'll talk Australian Open as well. It's VSiN's Primetime Action.
You are looking live at Primetime Action with Gil Alexander and Matt Brown on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on Primetime, of course, the futures of Tom Brady and of Aaron Rodgers, very much in doubt now. It's going to be fascinating to see what happens with those two guys moving forward. Will Tom Brady retire? Will he not? Will Aaron Rodgers leave the Packers? Sure sounds like, by what he said yesterday, saying, I don't want to be part of a rebuild, that he may be on his way. The Packers are $44 million over the cap. So that ain't good. So futures markets will be very interesting this offseason. And these things happen quick, right? It's going to happen probably before free agency, which we'll find out about the Rodgers decision. So
yeah, because they're. I mean, look, we saw the Saints pull off miracles last year and all that. So like, they'll be able to knock that number down a ton. But the problem is they've got to. They're going to have to franchise tag Devontae Adams because like he's not going to sign a long term deal there, not knowing what Aaron Rodgers' future is and what right. he's going to do.
And he wants number one wideout money.
So they're going to have to tag him, and that's going to be like $24, $25 million for him. So even if they do knock that number down, they're going to have to give an additional, you know, $7, $8 million to Devontae Adams this year as well. I think it's going to be rough. I mean, if I had any idea what was going to be going on in Chicago or Minnesota or something like that, I'd probably put in a future bet today on one of those to win the NFC North.
Here's a tweet from Gronk. Year 11 in the books. What a ride it's been. Grateful to the Bucks for giving me an opportunity to play another year. To my teammates, thank you for giving everything you had. The sweat we shed and memories made will never be forgotten. Thanks to the crew, too. Year 12, question marks.
What he should put is Brady coming back? Because if so, I will too. And if not, that'll be done.
Gronk just tweeted this like 15 minutes ago. But this was, these guys are driving me nuts in these days where it's like they just love playing with your minds. And it's like, I mean, that is a retirement tweet until the last sentence, right? I mean, that is the
12?
Thanks for the ride. Year 12?
Okay, we're going to get to the AFC and NFC championship, but I want to just read Ryan Hyatt's question of the night and just keep this in mind as we go through these. His question of the night is, what flaws were covered up this past weekend by NFL teams advancing that fans might not take into account this week? So we'll just keep that in mind. The first of the two championship games on Sunday will be the AFC championship. And by the way, the guesses, we guessed these lines last week looking ahead to championship week, dead on both of these. Bengals at Chiefs, it is 7. It is 7. And Ryan, for me, let me just answer the question. What flaws were covered up this past weekend? To me, the Bengals, listen, the Titans were the first team to lose a playoff game while having 9 sacks in a game since the merger. The Bengals were the first team to win a playoff game while allowing 9 sacks since the 66 Chiefs. Burrow, the first quarterback to be sacked 9 times, win a playoff game. But it goes beyond that for me. Remember the Bengals here the last 2 weeks. The whistle that came before the touchdown against the Raiders should have been replayed. There was a false start before a sack yesterday, right? Got replayed. The sack didn't count. The penalty on Cincinnati on the extra point that led to trying the two. Now, yes, Cincinnati did make the stop, but imagine they had the penalty of 12 men on the field that led to that game remaining tied 6-6. And then Taylor frantically trying to call timeout. He doesn't, and then Tannehill throws the pick. They've had a beautiful run of good fortune as well. Let's be clear about that. And I just think, Matt, that the Chiefs are just going to outclass them.
Yeah, as far as like the answer to that question, I mean, I don't think any of the flaws for the Bengals are hidden at all. I mean, like, it's very obvious the offensive line is the flaw, and I don't think I don't think that's hidden like at all, right? I mean, that's front and center, right, for this team. And on the Chiefs side of things, I don't really know if there is anything that you would be considered a flaw that kind of is going under the radar with this team. I mean, like, you know, we're seeing them kind of peak at the right time and certainly clicking on all cylinders. And more than anything, it's that thing that we were talking about at the middle of the season where Patrick Mahomes is taking what the defense is giving. Patrick Mahomes didn't throw a pass over 20 yards down the field yesterday. Not one time, not one single time. That's with Tyreek Hill on the team. That's with Travis Kelce on the team. That's with the other burners on the team and all that. Like, he's just taking what these defenses give him. And when you have all those playmakers and you've got these creative play calls coming from Andy Reid and all that, like, I think that it's a, I think it's a pretty tough deal. But that being said, I mean, this defense can still be scored on, right? I mean, like, this defense can still be scored on, and this defense doesn't do near as well pressuring the quarterback as the Titans defense does. And so, not with just the front four as it is anyway. Like, that was the thing, is the biggest difference yesterday is that the Titans just kept getting home with 4, right? And like the Chiefs haven't been able to get home with 4 all season long. They're not really like built for that, right? That's not really what they do. And let's not forget too, Tyrann Mathieu left this game with a concussion. We'll see if he gets cleared. I mean,
first play
we've seen these guys get through these concussion protocols, but still something for us to keep in mind there as well with all this. I took the 7.5. There's 7.5 here in Vegas. I took 7.5 with Cincinnati. I think this game plays fairly similar to what we just saw from the Bills, and I think it'll just kind of be a back and forth score fest here. I don't think either one of these defenses are going to really shut down either one of these offenses throughout the course of the game. And with that, I mean, look, even if it is a whoever has ball last wins the game, I have 7 and a hook. I feel pretty confident with 7 and a hook with this one. And so the other thing in this as well is that Cincinnati is much more efficient running the ball than the Bills are. And that's mainly by design, right? The Bills are just, they don't want to run the ball. They just want to throw the ball every single time and it works. But, you know, you do have Joe Mixon who can run the ball a little bit better, and he is a legitimate receiver out of the backfield as well and all that. So there's the added element with that. So, yeah, I think it plays within the 7.5 here. I think it's kind of closer, one of those close-ish type games. I don't, and it's going to be one of two things. I wouldn't even play the 7. If you like the Chiefs, then play it like at 10. Play an all-line. Like, the Chiefs are either going to motorboat this, or it's going to be like a last possession game. Like, it's not going to be anything in between.
Yeah, they. I was a little bit, like, we talked about these numbers last week and what we thought they'd be. I was a little surprised it actually opened this. I thought it was going to be short of 7. So
it was 6.5 for a blink.
Okay.
It was 6.5 for a blink.
So I would, like, the 7.5, I'm not jumping on it yet. I don't think I'll get there. I think this is a game I'm going to stay away from because I do think, I mean, regardless of where they're at, even if it's a backdoor situation, the Bengals offense can strike so quickly. And you know, Tyrann Mathieu, I think, is a huge deal. We saw some struggles on that. I think I'm going to be on the over on this game again, though, just with what we saw last week.
Yeah.
Yeah, the offensive line can be some problems, but, you know, sometimes, you know, sacks, fumbles, turnovers on that side of the ball helping over. I think I'm going right back to that in Kansas City this week. I haven't made the bet yet, sitting at 54. But I think you could see a lot of the same things that you saw, you know, maybe not that last 2 minutes, but a lot of the same things as far as offense goes with the ease of scoring between these two teams.
Saturday night, within a span of a few hours, the Packers end up scoring the fewest points of all the division round teams. Francis Ngannou wins by decision, which was like a major, you know, upset in terms of the betting number you could get on that.
9-1 on that Packers market. We looked at that last week.
9-1, probably double digits for Ngannou winning by decision. Shapovalov beats Zverev in straight sets. We'll get to that. So, I mean, all kinds of upsets Saturday night. And so the Niners advance to the NFC Championship, which will follow the Bengals and the Chiefs on Sunday. Niners at the Rams, 3.5 here in favor of the homestanding Rams. That game at 6:40 Eastern, 3:40 Pacific.
Yeah, there are threes available. If I didn't have such incredible liability on the Rams, I would bet the Rams at 3, but there's no point because I'm going to win more money. I'm going to win more money if they just win this game. It doesn't matter. So I just, like, I'm going to sit back and enjoy the game.
I played the 3, Matt. We were texting about this earlier. I played the 3, but I guarantee you it is the smallest NFL side bet I've played all year. It was just because I knew the number was going to move, right? Like, I was like, if I can still get 3 last night, I was like, I know this is going to go to 3.5. At least.
I was talking to Chrissy here. Chrissy Andrews runs the South Point Casino Sportsbook behind us. Because these numbers, I mean, when these numbers are on 3s and 7s like that, the amount of betting action back and forth that takes place, toggling back and forth, is just ridiculous. So this will probably be their greatest championship weekend ever.
Well, we saw that with, that was Jimmy Vaccaro last week, you know, walking in Ram bet after Bucks bet into the studio all week long.
Because
and it was
of the number.
3, 2.5, 3, 2.5, 3, 2.5.
Yeah.
And this one will just be on the other side. This one will be 3, 3.5, 3, 3.5, 3, 3.5.
And the week before, Tampa Bay or whatever, I can't even remember what week is what now. Tampa Bay, Philadelphia, same thing on the 7. Same thing. So both of these could go that way, toggling back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Rams here, and again, I mean, we'll see report today that Debo's okay, but he left that game beat up. Trent Williams left that game beat up. Jimmy Garoppolo is horrible again. I mean, I just, you know, there's just like, I mean, the Rams are the better team by far. So
except for the fact that they can't beat the Niners.
Yeah.
It is crazy. What is it, 6 in a row?
Yeah, it's.
I didn't even realize it was that much.
Jimmy Garoppolo is on the doorstep of his second Super Bowl in 3 years.
It's wild. I'm with Matt. Like, I love the Rams. I love that I have the futures because otherwise I'd probably be loaded up on this game. But I'm probably more nervous about it than I thought I would have been.
The old future that we all got before the season started. And you got the best of the bunch. You got that well before the season started.
Yeah, yeah. It was way back in.
Were your numbers?
Way back on the. It was not as good as I thought. So it's 13 on the 13 for the conference, and then 24 for the Super Bowl.
Australian Open next. VSiN's primetime action.
You are looking live at primetime action with Gil Alexander and Matt Brown on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on primetime action live from the South Pole. Gil, Matt, Kelly, let's talk some tennis. Australian Open, by the way, my pick tonight, Gael Monfils, +140. You can get him in a better number now against Matteo Berrettini later tonight. And when I mean later tonight, I mean late night while you're asleep. in Melbourne. By the way, how are we supposed to pronounce that? Melbourne, like we would normally, or do we adopt the Australian?
I don't adopt it.
I don't adopt
because
it
I feel like you're being a poser.
Being pretentious.
Yeah,
I agree. Okay, odds to win the Australian Open now as it stands, heading into the quarters. No surprise, Daniil Medvedev's minus 110. I actually think that's still low.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah. I have a Medvedev future just because it was a sort of a protection against Zverev. By the way, how about our Zverev futures?
That was the most annoying match to watch. Like, he just basically quit like in that thing. Like, he just, the whole body. And you know what?
Slamming
we talk
his
about
racket.
This all the time, where it's like tennis players will tell you when they are going to lose a match. And I was just so shocked at what I was watching. I didn't even grab my phone to make a live bet. Like, I'm just sitting here going like, is this really, like, he's just hitting the bottom of the net with, like, his returns. So, like, he just completely was like, yeah, all right, it's over. I'm going to punt this off.
Good for Shapovalov, who's gotten really far here in a tournament. He's always been all about talent and not really manifesting that talent, but he's in the quarters here.
It happened twice to me this weekend, Gil.
Which?
The watching someone punt it off and not going in live betting because I was just the typical Halep punt off, right? Like, where she just decides to, like – Simona Halep, if you're not a tennis person, you can watch Simona Halep play, and Simona Halep will let you know about 7 out of 10 times when she's about to lose a match.
Yes.
Like, she will just she'll just post it, like, right there for you to watch. And I'm watching it happen, and I didn't even think to go to my phone to make the bet. Now, she ended up, like, rallying and winning the second set, but then she loses the match or something. But in that first set, I go, oh, it's a Halep punt-off match. Okay, here it is. And then I didn't make a live bet. It was, like, two of the stupidest things I did this weekend was not making live bets on
either one of those. The mental aspect of tennis, unlike anything. Rafa Nadal, by the way, is the second short shot to win the men's side. He's at plus 250. Speaking of which, Nadal was playing Mannarino in the round of 16, and they played in the first set maybe the greatest tiebreaker I've ever watched in my life. I think it was like 16-14, but the shot making, there was about seven or eight winners in that tiebreaker that were just among the greatest points you'll ever see. And you knew that if Nadal won that, speaking of your live betting thing, you knew if Nadal won that, that was the end. And it proved to be the end. He ends up winning in straight sets.
Easy. The last two.
Because how can mentally, how can you how can you overcome that? Everybody else, by the way, is double digits. So there you go. To me, it's either Medvedev or Nadal at this point, but I think it's Medvedev.
It's like you said, I mean, minus 110, I think, is a pretty fair price, actually.
Here are exactas for the finals. Nadal versus Medvedev is plus 150. Berrettini, who I think is losing tonight, versus Medvedev is plus 450. Chapo versus Medvedev, 7-1. Monfils versus Medvedev, 8-1. And then you see some randos, Nadal versus Sinner, Nadal versus Tsitsipas, the long shots. I think these are all appropriately priced.
Yeah, not all listed, all options listed, obviously, but that's what they get.
I think you shut it off about the right.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you shut it off at the right time.
Monfils, Medvedev, maybe if you're forcing me to make a bet there, but I don't know. Nadal is still Nadal. Ladies' side. As far as the market currently, as we head into the quarters. Quarters have already started, by the way, with a match between Maddie Keys and Krejcikova, which I am not involved in. Maddie Keys, by the way, has become Maddie Keys again. Ash Barty, minus 140. She has always been the favorite. She remains the favorite. She hasn't lost a set, or what was it? She hasn't lost a service game, something like 60-something in a row.
Yeah.
Iga Swiatek, plus 330, my girl. Krejcikova 7-1, everybody else. Double digits. We got a winner on Danielle freaking Collins yesterday. That was nice. How about these other names at the bottom? Alizé Cornet, 30-1. Kaia Kanepi, the Estonian, 30-1. And Jesse Pegula, whose dad's Bills lost yesterday, 35-1. This has always been from the beginning. There's a reason why I only had Swiatek and Barty futures. Barty, the same thing as Medvedev protecting against Zverev. I have a Barty future to protect against Swiatek. If Eagle wins this whole thing, ooh, that's a nice little payday.
The bottom names, they're nice and they're fine and all that. And it's like, and look, there's far more random things that happen on the women's side than there is on the men's side. But it's just, you know, you look at the way these people are playing. And look, I was saying that about Sasha too, though. So I guess, you know, there is that. But again, I don't know. Maybe we'll find out. Maybe he'll say something. Get food poison. I don't know. But it was just like the weirdest thing. It was like from serve one. He just like this like weird body language. This whole like just kind of like I don't really care type deal that was going on until he finally started smashing rackets and stuff. Like, it was just,
this is,
it was
this
weird.
Is the thing about sports betting, though, I think, which is very telltale. It's like, when the Titans lose on Saturday, right, there's a couple people, you're sorry. No, it was never the bet, right? The bet was they get to the number one seed, and then I said very clearly, I'm like, that you set it up. That's why you make the bet. You set it up as well as you can. What happens after that? Hey, man, it's football. The thing with the Zverev bet, we got the greatest price ever.
Yeah.
We anticipated Djokovic being bounced from the country. Bounced is not a government term, by the way. It's mine. And so it's still a great bet. You have to understand that you will make a lot of bets that you did very well in making them, and then it has to manifest that the actual players on the field have to cooperate, or the players on the court, or the players on the course, whatever it is. And you just have to be okay with that. The more you do that, though, the more you will win. And so I think this Zverev thing is just, hey, man, we'd have made the bet over and over.
I'd have made the bet a million times, especially knowing that, especially with the way things all play out with Djokovic actually not getting to play in the tournament. But it is a little deflating when you do look and you just kind of see a guy and you're like, oh, we have a completely different version of this dude today. And it was, and I sat there and watched it and didn't make a lot. What was I doing?
Still hasn't won a major.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. He almost won one. Dominic Thiem beat him at the U.S. Open, famously the one where Djokovic threw the ball at the umpire, and the umpire fell like, you know, lineswoman fell like she had been shot. That was his shot. Will we see him win one? Eventually, probably, but probably should have won now, you know, more as Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer have dominated the sport, and we'll see Medvedev, with one major under his belt, get a whole bunch more as well now at some point. So Barty, Swiatek, that's the appropriate short shot at plus 160. That was the appropriate short shot from the beginning of the tournament, quite frankly. That's why those are the only two ladies that I bet on to win it all. Wow, Danielle Collins versus Barty is the second? That surprises me a little.
Huh.
I wouldn't have expected that to be the second short shot, quite frankly.
And only those five options listed.
If you forced me to make a bet, right? The other one, if you forced me to make a bet, it was Monfils versus Medvedev. If you forced me. If you forced me here, I'd go Matty Keys versus Swiatek, even though Matty Keys could lose this match, for all we know. But that would be the one at 10-1. Because Madison Keys, who has been to a major final in the U.S. Open, remember, I believe it was 2016, 2017, something in there. She lost to Sloane Stephens. She's regained her hard court swag. So that's something. NBA, we got a couple tip-offs here coming up.
Yeah, one game. No late West Coast games tonight. So this is on NBA TV tonight. So I believe that's why it is 6:10 Pacific time, 9:10 Eastern. Jazz at the Suns. Suns laying 12 to 12.5 points in this game, 220 to 221. You can find the total at. There are a lot of guys out on the Jazz side. Let me start with the Suns, though. DeAndre Ayton will not go tonight. Cameron Payne, who's been out, he's out still. Jay Crowder out for the Suns tonight. On the Utah side, you will not have Gobert. You will not have Mitchell. You will not have Royce O'Neal. You will not have Bojan Bogdanovic. You will not have Joe Ingles. You will not have Mike Conley. That is their entire starting lineup, plus their best guy off the bench. Hassan Whiteside will go, though. So if you like the Jordan Clarkson show, you're going to get a lot of that in from Utah tonight. This game's pretty unbettable when you're talking about that much of the bench playing. I don't really jump to games like that, but if you're interested in it, Matt, we always say look at some of these other guys for prop numbers and stuff like that. The one thing I can promise you, I'm not running to make the bet, but Jordan Clarkson's going to put up about 30 shots tonight. So I would not argue against an over on his point prop.
Yeah, that would be the look anyway, right? I mean, like, just feeling a little bit more confident in someone putting up shots as opposed to, like, whether you want to play a side in this thing.
Yeah.
Texas Tech plays Kansas a little later on, too, here, top of the hour. Actually, 6 minutes from now, 5 minutes from now. Big 12 basketball at Kansas, I believe this one. Is this at, yes, it is at Kansas. 7.5-point favorites, Jayhawks are in that one. That starts again, let's call it 10 minutes from now. Starts a little bit after the hour. And by the way, the Ryan Hyatt question about, you know, what flaws were covered up this past weekend. We talked about it, that the Bengals' flaws were there in, you know, full glory. I just think the Niners' flaw was there, too, in full glory. Yep. But it is up for handicappers to sort of remember. Jimmy G could have thrown about three or four pick sixes. Like, that didn't happen and could very well have happened. That's the thing with him, though. For every horrific pass he throws, then he'll throw a dime. Like, you have to give it to him in crunch time. He's been great, although he does, of course, have Debo to rely on, which is fabulous. 9-2 Jimmy Garoppolo when throwing zero touchdown passes. 3-0 in the playoffs. Tank Williams next.